Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your host, Juvon Tai Dung Yi Soon Sin, Jorn Vestai Vampyr, and Jajim Tai Jajim will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. My name is Jajim Tai Jajim, and joining me today are my two co-hosts,
Jorn Vestai Vampyr,
Juvon of the Crimson Fury.
All right, and today we are taking a look at a novel by Dean Wesley Smith and Christine Catherine Rush called A Warrior's Guide, or Star Trek Klingon, based on the game, CD-ROM game from, what was that, about 20 years ago?
1996.
Okay. So, just as a brief introduction, this book is advertised as the adaptation of the CD-ROM game of the same name, coming out in May 1996, the same month as the game. It is more likely the book and game were based off the same screenplay, which is credited on the cover of the book. While the game and story are largely the same, when it comes to Pock's story, the framing of how this story is related is different. The game presents it as a holodeck program created by Gowron to teach Starfleet personnel about the Klingon ways. While the novel has Gowron telling a story to a group of officers from Deep Space Nine and the Enterprise D, in an interesting turn, Barclay replaces the player in the storytelling as Gowron makes him guess what Pok is or should do from time to time. This story takes place during 2370, which would be Season 7 of Next Generation and Season 2 of Deep Space Nine. And a brief summary of the plot would be, peace talks between the Federation and Klingon Empire are at a standstill on Deep Space Nine due to Admiral Jellicoe's limited knowledge of Klingon customs and culture. Believing they are all just intergalactic thugs looking for a fight at the drop of the hat, Picard and Gowron, understanding the importance of these talks, invite Jellicoe to Quark's, where Gowron starts telling a story about a young man, Pok, starting on the eve of his rite of ascension. However, after a couple of deaths on Deep Space Nine, it becomes clear that Pok's story may hold the key to unraveling the present-day mystery. And that's kind of what the book's about. All right, so let's go right into overall impressions. And John, why don't you lead us off on this category?
There, in the book, there is a making of the CD-ROM. The CD-ROM was an effort to capitalize on an earlier CD-ROM they had made, which was Star Trek: The Next Generation Interactive Technical Manual. It was designed to immerse the viewer, this is the game now, immerse the viewer in Klingon culture, in that a lot of the items that are on the walls or in the background in the game are clickable to give a brief description and history of what those items are. This game came with a second CD, which actually had a Klingon language demonstration program, teaching program with it, where Gowron would say a Klingon word and you were expected to repeat the Klingon word, and then there would be a feedback loop. They had recorded a feedback track to collect common mistakes, and if whatever mistake it caught you making, it would repeat back, explain back to you, and give you a chance to do it again. So there's a lots of stuff that went on into the making of this game. The game, it's the book itself takes the game and converts that game into a pretty much a Deep Space Nine episode with Picard, Riker, Barclay, and now Admiral Jellicoe This is the same characters we saw in Chains of Command as the Captain Jellicoe that took over the Enterprise. And if you remember that character, you can understand why he has blinders on when it comes to understanding the Klingon culture and the way Klingons think. And you really can't have a successful negotiation with another species, another race, another culture, until you begin to understand that culture. Through the course of the story that's told in the book and the events that happen throughout the book, we come to a conclusion where a holodeck program is going to be produced for Starfleet officers. They don't say this, but you get the impression that it's officers like Jellicoe that don't really understand Klingons, and they're going to be taught how Klingons think, a way of looking at Klingons that allows you to take their beliefs into account.
Ah. Yeah, what he said.
Yeah, interesting. I was just going to say. So, Sean, what are your impressions, overall impressions of the book?
I really like this book. I thought it was... It could be said that it was a little needless to make it a crossover between TNG and Deep Space Nine, but that didn't really bother me. I enjoyed seeing the two casts interact because we don't really have an episode where we see a whole lot of it. They made a couple of guest appearances throughout their consecutive running seasons, but other than that, you don't see a lot of it. I'd say my only real complaint is the book's a bit on the short side, but I don't know how they really could have beefed it up anymore. Like it reached its natural conclusion and it didn't feel like it was rushed or anything.
They kind of had to do the crossover though, because if you look at the credits on the video game was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Oh, I enjoy the meta concept of Riker wanting to be the person who helps Gowron make the program, and Jonathan Frakes directed the game. I love that. I think.
And is there a better character throughout all of Star Trek to handle Pock's decision making than Lieutenant Barclay?
None whatsoever.
And I can't think of another Klingon officer who can be as stubborn as Jellicoe.
That is very true.
I never looked this up. Is this his first appearance as Admiral?
As an Admiral, yeah, as an Admiral it is, because his very first appearance was in that two-part episode.
Chains of Command.
Chains of Command, and he was a captain then, and so he had gotten promoted. And even in the more recent Star Trek novels, he continues to be an admiral.
Yeah, in Destiny, he's in charge of Starfleet.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I thought they mentioned in the book that he'd been promoted, so.
Well, they might just make that offhand comment, because this book is really geared towards somebody who watches the shows.
Oh, yeah, very much is. My overall impressions were that I really enjoyed this book because I like the story within the story idea that you have two different stories going on but at the same time they are two parallel stories with many things in common. A lot of stuff going on behind the scenes here. I really enjoyed the way they would sit down at the same place in Quark's and over dinner or over lunch or whatever, get another segment of the story and then move on. This is a really good book.
And it was cool to get to the end and they have a making of by David Mack. Reading that whole section, which is almost 40% of the book, is this making of the game. It was interesting to see what their rationale was, interviews with different people who were involved in it, and even people who were, I can't remember if they directly interviewed Jonathan Frakes or if it was just people who worked with him. It was interesting how seriously he basically took it and how seriously they all took it. They treated it like it was an episode of the show. It was really cool.
Yeah. Now, I'm kind of curious. Did either one of you play the game at any point?
I played it back in the day, but then before I read the book, I watched the walkthrough of the game just to remind myself of what happened.
Yeah, I've never played the game, but I did find the long version of the walkthrough that goes through all of the mistakes that Pock makes before coming to the right decision.
I did own the game at one point, and I did try to play it, but I found myself spending more time with the language lab than I did with actually playing the game, because I kept making the wrong decision and getting kicked out and then having to start over again. And I also watched the longer version of the walkthrough of the game, and really enjoyed that.
I don't remember if I remember playing with the language part. I remember playing the game, but I don't remember listening to them trying to get me to say sentences. But I know back then we had my dad got like a text to speech program for us to see how well it worked, and it was complete garbage. So I probably just assumed it wouldn't work for me.
The one that came with this game was quite good, because it was not very forgiving, and it insisted that you pronounce things correctly. That's where I learned that the apostrophe is a guttural stop. So when you say success in Klingon, kapla, that the end of the word has the apostrophe there, and you have a guttural stop at the end of that word. I actually learned quite a bit from it, and then I didn't do anything with it for a very long time, so I forgot most of what I learned.
And for people who are curious, I did do some research to see if patches of it exist, and there are some websites that look like they've have found ways to make it work with the current Windows. So if people have that game, I guess they can still play it if they want.
A cross promotion here on the CAG podcasts, CAS plural, from Starbase Indy. There was a panel with Robert O'Reilly and Mark Okrand, and they talked about the making of the language lab words on that second disc, and how Mark would feed Robert the word. He would turn to the camera, say the word, and then Mark had to go and try and figure out all the possible ways somebody could be mispronouncing that word, so they could record those mispronunciations of, you said it like this, you were supposed to say it like this, try again.
Yeah, in the book they dive into that a little bit about how it would have been almost impossible for them to program something that picks up on every single little accent, and basically they had Mark Orkland help them come up with ways that people would most likely mispronounce it incorrectly, and they did, and that's how the feedback was based off of that. It would guess how you probably weren't pronouncing it correctly based off what you said, and then try to give you the feedback that would help.
Well, actually, there was a recording for each of the words that basically was, you said it wrong, try again, to catch all of those other mistakes that somebody would make.
It was a good language lab to use, absolutely. I did learn from it.
A lot of the Gowron speech talking from that lab disc are available out on YouTube. Jim, we used a lot of that in the Klingon cursing panels that we used to run for the ship a few years back.
Yeah, I remember those. I remember those. Well, let's move on to characters. John, lead us through this.
Basically, you've got the Enterprise crew, the DS9 staff, Gowron, Jellicoe, and Barclay. I separate Barclay out because sometimes he's on Next Generation, sometimes he's on Voyager. And then you've got Poke, Voke, Takar, Tornig, Qualoon, and Larat, several Klingon characters that are part of the game and story that Gowron's telling. But then, of course, we've got to throw Lursa and Bator into the story, into the actual story, not the computer story, to give villains to the piece who are trying to disrupt or finish off killing off Gowron.
Yeah, Lursa and Bator kind of provide that parallel in the real world to the story that Gowron is telling, of how a great house is trying to be overthrown by someone lesser.
And I think, like we talked about earlier, a couple of the characters are really needed, like Lieutenant Barclay and Jellicoe, because they're the ideal candidates for making the decision and having their eyes opened to see another culture for what it is. Like, the video game is supposed to open the eyes of the players to what the Klingon culture is and immerse the player in Klingon culture.
Yep, they were very necessary. I thought that for the most part, Picard and Barclay did a great job, or I should say the writer did a great job of portraying them. And then, of course, Riker seemed to spend most of the book trying to make time with Jadzia.
It did feel like the whole Jadzia Riker's thing was just put in there to pad out the storyline a little bit.
More than likely, I don't know how many other novelizations from the Star Trek universe you guys have read, but there's a lot of padding that goes into any of the novelizations from any of the movies.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, could you see a more, perhaps how Dax and Riker would make a natural couple. I mean, how attractive they would be to each other.
Oh, God, I just remembered something. The Star Trek DS9 episode with Thomas Riker, Dax points out that Riker owes her money, and Thomas Riker has no clue what she's talking about.
I remember that.
That was a good episode. That was a nice way to use that character.
Uh-huh. Only it wasn't Dax that was looking seriously at Thomas Riker at that time. It was Kira.
My thought was, here's a throwaway line they've got in an episode that kind of refers back to a book, and I don't know, because both of them are second season, so I don't know if they are related in any way. We can just speculate that they might be.
I never thought of it that way. In fact, until you mentioned it just now, I never even really thought about Thomas Riker being on that on Deep Space Nine. That's a good catch.
The DS9 crew, you know what? I really thought that Sisko wasn't near as prominent as I would have expected him to be in a novel that had DS9 involved.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that they're even taking place on Deep Space Nine to begin with.
It's quite a ways from the Klingon Federation border. So yeah, that's kind of iffy thing.
And Gul Dukat showing up was kind of random. If it was like peace talks between the Klingons and the Cardassians, maybe it would have made a little bit more sense.
Well, that's very true. But, you know, it's not the first time that the Klingons have been helping out with DS9 quite a bit. And I don't know, the Dukat thing kind of felt like it came out of left field.
Yeah, that's something they could have definitely expanded on to make the book a little bit longer, was why was Gul Dukat there.
It would have been, had I written it, it would have been my choice to bring, instead of Dukat to come in and save the day, I would have used Martok.
Was Martok even around at that point?
This is before, I believe this is probably before he was captured by the Dominion.
Yeah.
But on the show, he hadn't shown up on the show yet.
Okay, well, then that would explain it. Now, we started to talk about Jellicoe a little bit, and I'll tell you what, this guy is just so rigid and so single-minded. I can't believe that Starfleet would actually send him for any kind of negotiations whatsoever.
Neither can I. It's one of the things that I like about his character when it shows up, and I also kind of frustrates me, is that every time he shows up, it's like, "What? Why is he even doing this?" Like, he seems to hate his job so much.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the DS9 episodes, he didn't get along with anybody. He didn't even try to get along with anybody. He took over another ship, and there was absolutely no honeymoon period. And talk about stiff-necked and just absolutely, I don't know, maybe the circumstances surrounding it, but his character never changed after that. The more recent novels, he has lightened up a little bit, believe it or not.
Yeah, and New Frontiers, he tends to be more of the butt of the joke most of the time, and it did lighten up his character quite a bit.
Well, didn't he also overlook something? I'm trying to think of one of those novels where something happened and he just kind of overlooked it for a bit.
Maybe making Calhoun the captain, because he didn't. I never understood how he became the captain, because Jellicoe didn't like him.
Well, Picard did sponsor him in Starfleet.
He wasn't a Starfleet officer at the beginning of the book series. He had quit at the time and then came back because Nekevelich, I think her name was, admitted that he was doing black ops for her.
Right. Okay, so we have Lieutenant Barclay, or Broccoli, or however you want to address him.
Well, remember, Gowron took a liking to him.
Well, he did. And, you know, it's funny how he started out being scared, and as time went on, he became a little more confident as time went on. But, you know, he was his typical buffoonish self.
He was learning to make better choices, and that's how Gowron learned to respect him, because Barclay had opened his mind and was learning the culture that Jellicoe was fighting to peer into.
Well, Barclay definitely kept his mind open, and I mean that he would come back after that first session probably was also quite impressive to Gowron.
I was a little confused about Worf being dropped from that group altogether. Like, he's there the first session, and there's no explanation why he wasn't there in future sessions.
See, now, I had the impression that he was at the future sessions, but he really didn't play any kind of a part in it whatsoever.
I don't remember them ever addressing him actually being at the table. They always address Jellicoe's there, Kirk. Picard, Gowron, obviously, then Broccoli, and then Jadzia and Riker were usually the focus of when the meeting started. But I don't remember Worf being at any of the future ones, except for maybe the last session.
I don't recall. But then again, he wasn't mentioned that much.
No, I can't even remember placing him in the book, for that matter. I mean, if he showed up, I've lost fact that he showed up.
He was at the first lunch, because Gowron point out that he couldn't use them because Worf notes the culture, and Worf was one. They also made a point. They were talking about how Riker was mulling over about how he had to take the wine, because it's not enough that Worf takes it, because he's already Klingon.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it, yeah, that was there, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember him mentioned, but he didn't play a big part. Now we have the story that Gowron was telling, and we have several Klingons involved there, and one of them is Larat, an older warrior.
Who was actually played by J.G. Herzler, who plays Martok.
Okay, and then Kalan, the uncle. I'm trying to think of the character. He's got kind of a pot belly. He was a Klingon. He was the Klingon that butted heads literally with Data in 10 Forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was one of the Klingons in this too.
Yeah, but he went by a different name in this, because he was Nudok in the Deep Space Nine, or excuse me, the Next Generation episode where he and Data were talking. I was wondering which character was his, what was his character's name in this one?
I don't know. To be honest, I didn't really think about it, because when I was writing down the list of names, I was more focusing on the Klingons who were relevant to the plot.
Yeah, he was more a part of Gowron's story than he was the actual book. But it wasn't a very big part. He just seemed to be kind of there to fill out maybe the scenery or something.
Which could be. There were a lot of Klingons in the video game that were background characters just to make you feel that you had a cluster of Klingons you're involved with.
Yeah. And then Lursa Bator, and I laughed every time I saw this name, Dracla.
Is that how you pronounce it? I looked at it, I was like, this is a ridiculous name.
Nope, Dracla. Dracula, Dracla.
if you know, and you got to look at it too, is it da rock la, which means is a guttural stop missing, or is it, it's tough to figure out how this one's supposed to be pronounced, but he's the son of the bad guy from the video game coming to get his revenge.
I just thought it was something that the authors came up with that was, it was veiled humor.
You know what? At one point they had like this word and it was quipla, but it was spelled with an O instead of a Q. So I wrote it down and I was like, oh, I got to figure out what this word is. And after like surfing around on the internet for a bit, it kind of dawned on me, you know, it could just be a spelling error they never picked up on.
Yeah, it could very well be, but it just, every time the guy's name would come up, he was not a very nice character. Seemed to be into really trying hard to throw things off track.
I enjoyed the Lurat story more in the book because it's more like, obviously, they did talk about the fact that Jonathan Frakes made some adjustments to the storyline, so involved more different characters rather just always focusing on Gowron and Poke. But I found the way that they related the Lurat story in the book was a lot more interesting, just with Gowron's commentary going along with it, explaining why he has to do what he's doing to that older Klingon. And then eventually he's like, now that you've established the pecking order, now you got to make him your friend.
Yeah, that was a very interesting and fun looking insight into Klingon culture, where you actually show disrespect to your elders till you establish your place, and then you turn it around and you honor them. Lurat, I think if he'd been younger, though, I don't think it would have gone that direction.
If he'd been younger and able to defend his post, then Pock wouldn't have gotten the post, and it would have been Lurat's, what I almost said, his right to have the post that he could defend.
It is definitely a very interesting way to decide what you're going to do on board a ship.
It also means that every officer on the bridge of a Klingon ship is able to do every position on a Klingon ship.
So there really is no specialization like there would be in Starfleet?
Probably not.
That was the impression that I got. And I think that the Lurat character was specifically there to be the demonstration of how you achieved tactical officer, weapons officer, gunner, whatever you want to call it. A couple of other things that we did see in the video game to make this an immersive experience is you saw someone singing Klingon. You talked about it in the book, but it's different when you can actually hear somebody singing Klingon. You got a rendition, and this is the first time we saw it, the Klingon anthem that everybody has done the translations of now and try to learn the words of. And again, the honoring of Lurat at the end with that poem, song, whatever you want to call it, is the singing songs of the deeds of your forefathers, those who came before you. These are interactive pieces. These are immersive pieces that this game was designed to do, to give you a chance to experience and learn Klingon culture.
And that song did come back in Deep Space Nine.
Oh, I thought it was familiar.
Yeah.
Which song?
Hoi, Kalis, Chuo, however it goes. But yeah.
That's the Klingon anthem, yeah.
Right. Well, Martok led the ship on it when he took over. Now I can't remember the name of the ship, but he led the crew in that song.
Which, again, is why Jonathan had to be very serious about what he put into this video, because CBS, Paramount was watching and probably going to use some of the stuff later on that they come up with.
I know there's the other game that's like this immersive experience. Did they do the same thing where they had a corresponding book to go with it?
Wasn't that about the Borg?
Are you talking about the Borg or the technical manual?
Either one.
Jim, you were saying there was a Borg game because I've never heard of that one. The other one I heard of was the immersive technical manual.
The Borg one had Q in it, didn't it, John Delancey?
You know, I've only heard that it existed. I don't know anything about it.
The idea is that this ensign, the whatever ship you're on, is being called to action, so they unload all the recruits, and you're one of them. And Q shows up and gives you a chance to avenge yourself against the Borg because your parents would have been lost in the Battle of Wolf 359 or whatever it was. And not only do you get to fight the Borg, you actually get transported back in time into that battle.
That, you know, that sounds familiar. It really does.
So here's an opportunity for those of you listening to us. The first person to write in the comments about the board game and let us know what's going on wins a no prize.
Okay. Well, you know, well, since we've started talking about the game, let's continue on with that idea. Now, well, and maybe not so much the game, because as we figured out, none of us have really ever played it, but there is the YouTube video that was taken from the game, directed by Jonathan Frakes. It's a feature film length work, and it isn't too bad, really.
It's actually very good. It's up to the quality of any of the episodes, you see, of Trek. And there are multiple versions of the game out there on YouTube. If you want, you can get a short version where they make all the right decisions, or you can get an expanded version where they make all.
Robert O'Reilly did another like video production style game. It's called Star Trek Next Generation Interactive VCR Board Game, a Klingon Challenge, where he's a Klingon who takes over the Enterprise, and you just like pop in the VCR and he talks every once in a while. It is hilarious. He's not playing Gowron. He's playing different Klingon, but it's so funny.
Apparently there's a YouTube video of all the sequences that he does, but you can't make heads or tails out of them without the videotape.
Yeah. And the VHS has kind of gone the way of the dinosaur.
In regards to that particular game, I've played several VCR video games, and this one has the most replay value of any of the ones I've ever played before. Most of them, once you know how the game goes, it's kind of over from there. You kind of get it. But with this one, it's created in such a way that you can play it several times and still enjoy it.
See, that's the one thing I wondered about as I watched the video. I actually watched it last Sunday. You know, once you get through it and you've made all the right decisions, it kind of loses its value.
Except if you've got the video game, it's interactive. So everything that's in the scene can be a learning tool. You can click on a Beckleth and it tells you what it is. You can click on one of the food items on the table. It talks about the food item. So there's a deeper level of experience available to you, because it was supposed to be an immersive experience, not just a one-time play game.
And I do appreciate that part of it. But the game itself, you know, once you get through the game and you've made all the right decisions, it's kind of over, and there's no challenge to it anymore. It might be fun to just go through and watch the narrative once in a while, but other than that...
Well, the replay value in the game is in that... Language Institute thing.
See, and I think that's probably why I gravitated more towards that. I didn't care for the game. I've never been a big person to sit and play a computer game. Sitting in front of my computer playing a game, sitting in front of my computer watching a TV show or a movie or something, it's just not something I want to do. If I'm going to watch a movie or something like that, I'm going to sit in my lazy boy and relax and enjoy it. But the language lab that was included with that game was just incredible.
One of the things that I noticed watching the game was there's a point in there where Paul challenges the truth of the bad guy at the end, and they have to do a ritual combat. One of the choices that Paul has is to choose a weapon. And if you choose the dagger, then that's a bad choice. You have to choose the Beckleth. But in the video they have, his first choice was the Klingon dagger. And I'm going to myself, okay, it's going to be an inside fight. Polk's got him in 5 seconds. But that's from my SCA training, knowing how to use a small weapon against a guy that has a reach weapon.
Yeah. Well, and Polk made the wrong decision. They made that very clear. And when you make the wrong decision in the game, you get kicked out.
But I think Polk could have taken him with the dagger.
Maybe if he had more experience. But remember, we are talking about someone who has just gotten through the Rite of Ascension.
One of the things they talk about in the episode where Worf finally kills Galron is that Galron made the mistake of choosing a Beckleth. Galron was trained with a dagger. When he fights Kalus in that particular episode, he beats Kalus because he knows how to dagger fighting better than anything else, better than Kalus does. So, you know, it I don't know. It depends.
Also, he's going up against Worf, who has won first place trophies in Bat'leth tournaments too.
All the more reason he should have chosen the dagger.
But that might be, Galron is also, there is like a decline of Galron where he becomes too full of himself. And that might be symbolic of how he became too full of himself. Is that not only am I going to beat Worf, I'm going to beat him at his own game by grabbing the Bat'leth.
Yeah, I know. It's just the old medieval fighter in me that looks at weapon systems and figures how to work whatever I have on hand.
So let's talk about, we've talked about now a little bit about the story that Galron tells, which we can find on YouTube, actually. How about the story that is going on Deep Space Nine? We have murder, we have intrigue, we have Riker trying to strike up a date with Dax.
And being interrupted every time they go to dinner.
Yeah, for one reason or another. Let's discuss some of that a little bit.
What it looked like from the get-go, the reason that this whole thing takes place is Galron realizes that Jellicoe, and by extension the Federation, does not understand the warrior mythos that Klingons embrace. They look at honor and duty in a different way than the Federation looks at honor and duty. And he sees this story as a chance to convince Jellicoe to bring him around so that their talks can be more fruitful.
So what are we actually gathering to discuss? What are these negotiations about?
They never do get into that. The whole story is told around the negotiations, and I was wondering if maybe I could narrow it down to an episode. Maybe there's an episode where they were in peace, all they show were peace talks, and I was trying to figure out when this episode took place, and maybe there's an episode there's a story that it kind of gels with. But from what I could tell, this is the peace talks are kind of inconsequential to the storyline beyond this is why they're all here.
Yeah, see, I was wondering what exactly we were negotiating about, because we have the Khitomer Accords in place and
decades earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're still governed by those. They didn't get set aside until later.
All they ever referred to is these are peace talks. And they only keep talking about the fact that Jellicoe doesn't understand Klingons.
Yeah. See, more of the point of the story to me was the Duras sisters actually saw an opportunity to remove Galron from power.
Yeah. Oh, also, I was trying to look into, I thought maybe these negotiations were for use of the wormhole. Was the only theory that I really had going. And when I looked into it, there's an episode in the first season of Deep Space Nine where it's already been established the Klingons can use the wormhole.
Yeah, so there really doesn't seem to be a thread there to pull on to figure out what's going on. We just have some kind of peace talks going on. Maybe a mutual defense pact. Who knows? It could be anything.
Yeah, there's no real... This is the goal that Galron wants to get to, and this is the goal that Jellicoe wants to get to, other than the mutual understanding thing.
So it basically was just a plot device to bring Galron and Jellicoe together and to get a context for Galron's storytelling.
It's also season 7 of Next Generation. This maybe they had to get together and renegotiate some stuff after the Klingon Civil War.
But didn't the Klingon Civil War happen like 3 years earlier?
And also, Lursa and Betor didn't survive that, did they?
Yeah, Lursa and Bacor actually died in Star Trek Generations.
Which would be about a year after this.
Okay, so then they did survive that.
I think it was implied that they might not have, but you didn't know for sure.
No, they're pretty definite. They were beaming out and leaving the kid behind to take the fall.
Oh, it was the kid who took... Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Worf spared his life.
Which, you know, would have been an interesting thing if they had left Worf around the table while Gowron was relaying the story, because Worf had some stylistic impressions of Klingon culture that really weren't modern Klingon culture.
Well, as they said, you know, as far as Jellicoe was concerned, Klingons were nothing but a bunch of murdering, bloodthirsty killers, and he had made up his mind that that's all there was to it. The honor that Klingons had were reserved for only exchanges between Klingons. It did not extend to races outside of their own.
And I think Worf expressed a lot of, in The Next Generation, a lot of almost the opposite side of that, but it was so stylized, so entrenched. It was out of a book, the way he learned it, and even he would have learned something from Gowron's story.
Oh, definitely. Worf did have a lot to learn. He understood his culture fundamentally.
Book learning.
Yeah, but as far as actual practice is concerned, he got quite an education as the years went on.
So I think that would have been an interesting reaction if they had taken in and shown that in the book, in addition to Jellicoe's.
Very true. Well, let's go on to favorite points of plot. I'll go ahead and take the lead on this one. I really liked the story within the story aspect of things and how the two stories paralleled each other with the intrigue and the background stuff that was going on. I didn't really appreciate Gowron's story until I could actually see it played out when I watched it on YouTube, which made it very real to me. I wish I could have been there to listen to him tell it. You know, I tried to put his voice in there as I read, and I wasn't hearing it as I should, but I still really like this book and would definitely recommend it.
This book is unique in that it's got more than one point of view to it. We've got the actual written words that tell the story, so you can reread a passage, so you can go over something. And then we've got the video game, which shows us the story, which allows us to interact with the items in the story. And visual cues are different than auditory or literary cues to an experience. And I think we get more to this story, more to learning the culture, because we've got multiple points of view to this particular story.
As far as favorite plot points go, we've already kind of covered the one that I wrote down, Riker being the driving force behind the holodeck training program. And mostly I like that just because it amuses me that Jonathan Frakes was the one who directed the game.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing too. The way they decided to make this into a holodeck training program to better understand the Klingon culture, you know, because how many others, if Jellicoe was completely ignorant to Klingon culture, how many others at various levels would have also been ignorant?
I also like that the story in the game and the story in the book are different enough. It doesn't feel like it's just repeating itself, but they're similar enough that you see the similarities, and really the real difference between the two of them is that everything's from Gowron's point of view in the novel, which it should be. He's just sitting there telling them. That's even the right way it's written. It isn't like it shifts perspective to the past. It's in the present, him telling it. And in the game, you are playing the character of Poke, and it's him just wandering around, and they deviate from him being around Galron all the time because he isn't necessarily going to be around Galron all the time.
And I think it's great that as they're telling the story, they've got Barkley making mistakes that Galron can react to in the book and find in himself a greater appreciation for the Star Trek people, for the Federation people, trying to understand his culture and injects a sense of humor to the Galron character as opposed to just dryly telling the story.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering at this point, is there anything about the book, game, or video that we haven't already covered?
No, I think we've been pretty thorough in that.
The only thing I have left in my notes is that a tweet I got from David Mack, and somebody sent me their review of the book. In response to me just tagging him in a tweet about after I finished the book, he said, "One of the many short nonfiction pieces I wrote for Star Trek in the years after my TV writing debut on Deep Space Nine, but before Simon Schuster invited me to try my hand at Star Trek pros fiction. I also worked on New Frontiers Minipedia and the Star Trek Amapeda CD-ROM." He's written quite a few Star Trek books at this time, David Mack. The one that he's probably most well-known for would probably be the Star Trek Destiny trilogy.
Yeah, he's killed a lot of characters, too.
Well, I guess that goes with the, how old would you be if you were born in 1592?
And you say there was something else you had, Sean?
Yeah, one of the people from the book review group, they wrote a review, and then they wanted to submit it for the podcast because I've been throwing it out there on that Goodreads thing that we're looking for feedback.
Right.
And this is from Adrian, and he writes, "Klingon was a fun foray through Klingon culture. It's a pretty short read and entertaining way to spend an afternoon. The plot centered around Klingon High Chancellor Galron spinning a tale of another Klingon Poke. Typically Klingon quests for vengeance for the crew of the Enterprise in Deep Space Nine. Having never played the CD-ROM game, I'm not sure how faithfully it stuck to the game. I also enjoyed the inclusion of Barkley and Jellicoe. I may be a minority, but I did enjoy Jellicoe's character in Chain of Command and was happy to see him here. One thing that did drive me a little nuts about this book is that every dozen or so pages, Galron, who is telling Poke's story to the members of Enterprise and DS9, stopped and asked Barkley, how would you handle this situation and such? How would you handle such and such situation Poke finds himself in? I'm guessing this was to mirror the gameplay the book is based on. I found it really annoying and could hear the CD drive whirling every time this happened. The author definitely could have adopted a better narrative structure despite this problem. I did find the plot to be fast-paced, but it held my interest throughout. 2.5 out of 5 stars."
Okay, what are your thoughts on his review?
I don't disagree with it, but I don't see what he sees as issues. I see as some strengths in the story. I thought it was entertaining that Barkley had to contend with Galron's questions.
And I think I already mentioned the same thing, is that having Barkley there allowed Galron to be humorous to the story, not just a monolithic character.
Well, and, you know, Galron chose probably the least experienced person he could find in Barkley with Klingons to make him think about what choices could be made.
Yeah, I think Barkley was a very good choice, a very well-made decision by Galron.
Yeah, short of just making up a brand new character, I can't think of anybody else from that time period who have been a better fit.
So how about on to closing thoughts and rating the book? Any closing thoughts, guys?
My thoughts on this book, I really enjoyed the fact that you had the multiple points of view. I really enjoyed the fact that you could see the book and read the book, because you get different things from both experiences. As far as rating this experience was concerned, if you take both book and video game into consideration and the learning lab into consideration, I really would give this a 5 as an experience.
I enjoyed this book quite a bit more than the first two that we reviewed. And I would, despite it being this short, I would say this is now one of my favorite books to that I've read of the Star Trek series. I also, despite how long it had been since I played the game, upon playing, watching the playthrough, it reminded me how much I did enjoy playing it the first time. And I would, too, give this 5 out of 5. It's good.
I'm also going to go with 5 out of 5 stars for this book. Well, maybe I should say 5 out of 5 plates of gah for this book.
Only if Pac brings you the right one.
There we go. And as I said before, I enjoyed it. And it was the first book that we've read for the show that felt very much Star Trek, very much the way I would expect it to feel reading a Star Trek book. The characters behaved the way they were supposed to, and it was just great overall.
So with that, what are we going to look at next time, guys?
Star Trek Time Trap, the new novel by David Dovkrin. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Okay, and by new novel, you mean 1990 what?
Hey, I'm just reading the title, man.
I realize that, but I don't want the viewers to think that it actually is a brand new novel.
It's the 40th book that they printed.
And they printed a lot.
Well, back in the day, they did number them all. They've since stopped doing that.
And in the day, they were actually putting out 2 or 3 a month in the different TOS, Next Generation, DS9, Voyager, or whatever other spinoff.
Well, this would have been before that. This would have been around the movies. This would have been from the 80s. Oh, I forgot to mention, this is the most recommended book we've had so far. Kathy, Buddy, and Roger, thank you for your recommendations. All three of you recommended this book, so this is why it's the next one.
Awesome. It's nice to know our audience is getting involved. Feedback, thank you for the feedback. Thanks for the recommendation. Just keep them coming.
Hey, we don't necessarily know what you guys want to hear about. You guys may know a book that we wouldn't even consider. We need to hear from you. Thanks, guys.
Very true.
Well, the best way to do that is most of the recommendations have come in through Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Keg Podcast, Twitter, Keg Podcast, Instagram, Keg Podcast. Pretty much if you write Keg Podcast into something, you'll probably get us. As for email, it's podcast@keg.org. Feel free to send us any of them. You can even tag your recommendations on the website right into the comments of podcasts. I recommend you do on the most recent one because I don't make it a habit of digging through the archives and checking all them to see if they have new comments. But yeah, Facebook is where I hang out the most as far as social medias go. So that'd probably be the best way to get a hold of us to tell us which books you like. And on top of that, there's a photo album in there of just random books that I own that mention Klingons in the synopsis. And I posted them and just wanted people's feedback on them. That would be a good place to leave feedback is in that photo album.
Excellent. Well, there it is. That's our show for today. And thanks for listening to Bound by Honor. Kapla.
I'm Jorn.
Kapla.
And I'm Javon. Kapla.
You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kurg Zantai Loon Keej. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!